I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self-Build Magazine.
Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Dave Magner, who with his wife Lisa built his home on a forested piece of land. This fabulous new build project was featured in the spring 2023 edition of Self-Build Magazine, which you can get as part of a Self-Build Plus subscription. Go to selfbuild.ie for full details. So, Dave, thanks for joining us. I guess we might as well start with the backstory. I think Lisa's parents gave you this fabulous plot to build on. And where'd you go from there?
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for having me, first of all. Good to chat about this kind of stuff. Basically, it started off with we got offered a lovely little bit of land at the back of Lisa's parents' site. Which was great, but it was full of trees and stuff. So we then had to try and figure out how we wanted to build it and all that kind of stuff. So, and also figure out how to sensitively clear the land.
Okay. And so what happened next?
Everything starts with the architect. So we worked with a really good local architect to try and get us through the planning process. Someone who has good experience with, that's Mick Brown, someone who has good experience with the Wicklow Council and understanding what they want and their needs. So yeah, we drew up some plans, and rather than going with like a broad strokes submission, we decided why not just do close to final plans for the planning rather than broad strokes. And I just didn't want to have to go through the architecture process twice, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So in the hope that Wicklow would be very kind to you with their their approach to planning. So what was the design? Walk us through the design.
Yeah, well, the design, the way we wanted to have, we always wanted to have open living space, but generous and comfortable private space, if you know what I mean. So we were very keen on lots of light, open space, modern, really efficient. Efficiency is kind of a theme of this whole house that we didn't want any wasted space, and we didn't want anything that didn't perform a function, you know. We didn't want to build something big. We wanted to build something as small as we could, but still tick all of our boxes. So we kind of went down that route of creating a bit of a light and space machine, you know?
Right. Okay. So from the outside as well, there's quite a bit of a design process as well of how the house would look, wasn't there? How did that evolve?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we had multiple different things in mind for how the house would look visually from the outside. Initially, we wanted to have it clad because we're surrounded by some really beautiful old forestry. Next door, they have redwoods, they have oaks, they have all kinds of beautiful ash and beech and stuff. So we've got a lot of borrowed landscaping next door, and we wanted the house to sit into that rather than fight against it. So we wanted to clad it initially, but that was determined as not being in keeping with the area by the Wicklow Council. So we weren't allowed clad anything. That was made very clear. So we kind of
are there houses and- next to you? What's next to you?
Now, we're in Delgany here, so there are more houses next to me every day. There's a lot being built. So there's Lisa's parents' house is over at the end of the garden, and it's down a cul-de-sac street that is mainly dormer houses. So the council wanted us to build something in keeping with the area. So, you know, we didn't really want to build a dormer. I don't think dormers are necessarily like the best option for efficiency. So we ruled that out. So we decided to go with a dark render rather than cladding to try and drop it into the trees behind us. And also in order to try and fulfill the council's needs or compromise with the council a little bit, we built it exactly to the centimeter, the same height as Lisa's parents' house, which is at the end of the garden, just to be kind of like, look, it's not a dormer, but it's exactly the same height as a dormer. We're not going when there's no pitch roof.
Yeah. So how about the stone cladding? Was that to soften the modernist look, or what was the idea for that?
Yeah, it was just to try and add a little bit more natural texture to the house, because I was a bit concerned that we'd end up with a big gray box, you know, and a big gray box. It's nice and modern and stuff, but it's not very soft. So we have a cantilever outside the front door. We decided to clad the whole inside of that with stone. And then the windows around the house, I was pretty determined to put in timber windows just to, again, add some natural texture, soften everything. But everyone I talked to about timber windows was just told me not to do it for the maintenance reasons. And I was pretty stubborn about it. And eventually I started looking elsewhere and trying to figure out how I could have the best of both worlds. And I know like aluminium windows are popular and all this kind of stuff and metal, but I ended up going for PVC windows because I just love the flexibility of style you can get with them now. They're low profile. On the inside, they're dark gray, but on the outside, they're a cherry timber finish, which is exactly what I wanted, but there's zero maintenance. So I know PVC windows can be a bit of a dirty word, but honestly, I really think that's not relevant to what PVC windows are anymore. They're almost indistinguishable from more expensive options, you know, but more flexible.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. That's true. Yeah. So the in terms of the energy efficiency you were talking about, that was you went for passive house design, didn't you? So was that factored in from the very beginning, or did that come late?
It was always part of this plan to try and create a house that was super efficient, because I kind of knew that building a house would be this huge financial outlay that would be big. So I kind of figured, why not make it a bit bigger? It's going to be painful either way. Why not make it a bit bigger and invest in the fact that I'm going to be living in this house for a long time and make it really efficient and spend the money up front?
Yeah. And so how did that
over the years?
Sorry, there was a delay on the thing, and make it really efficient. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. So how did that have any kind of knock-on effect on the design itself?
It, funnily enough, it didn't really, you know. Just thinking about it here, no, I don't think we had to make any compromises in order to make it passive, because it was kind of part of the fabric of the design from the beginning. So the design was geared around leaving enough room for ventilation ducts, leaving enough space for all the various bits and bobs and the machinery and that kind of stuff. So because we had decided on it from the start, the compromises felt minor.
Yeah. And yeah, and the shape and the that monolithic kind of structure, I suppose, you weren't sprawling out for miles out as no. well. Yeah, the shape was already taking that into account.
It's a box. Yeah. You know, boxes are really handy because they're efficient, you know.
Yeah. So how do you go about the building method then? How did you choose how to build the house?
Well, like initially I was leaning into this idea of efficiency again, and I was hoping to go down the road of, you know, panels, wall panels prefabricated in the factory and arrive on site and go up really quickly. And so I was talking to a bunch of people about that and ended up going with a builder who specializes in steel, light gauge steel framework rather than timber framework. You're starting to see it more and more in Ireland, but it's pretty popular in the UK, where you're building the frame out of steel, and it can go up it can go up very quickly, like a bit of a jigsaw, but it can also be assembled off site and brought on site. And that was the plan when the builder came on board, but actually it wasn't the reality. The reality was the steel got delivered on site and had to be assembled and put up. So it didn't turn into the most efficient build like I'd wanted. But I think that's probably down to the industry over here just being a little bit slower to streamline, you know, than other countries. So we're a little bit behind in the methodology department, you know.
Yeah. So when were you building? Remind us.
We were building, God, it was 2019.
Yeah. Okay. Right before COVID hit, I guess.
Before COVID. So COVID came and the build was pretty much done, and we spent COVID painting.
Oh, that was good timing on your part.
we could get in and do some bits, you know. Now, the problem when you're painting your own house is, we were painting away and then the painter came in after COVID and said, you know, we'll have to do it all again. So it was probably more of an exercise in keeping us sane than it was in being savvy.
So walk us through that whole process of the steel frame. So what were the steps? You were saying it could have been a bit more efficient than it was.
Yeah, but like, it just, I think, you know, if assembling anything on site, in Ireland, it just adds complexity. It adds weather issues. It adds, you know, it adds problems. And if you can assemble entire walls in a warehouse, stick them on the back of a truck and deliver them to site and just assemble them, then you can stick to a schedule that is really concise. But I think anytime you're doing anything on site in the weather in Ireland, things just grow legs and the process expands, you know. So it did go up quickly. It was the quickest part of the whole process was the framework of the house going up. You know, you could walk around what the rooms would be for quite a long time. You know, that went up in a couple of days, because it's pre-cut lengths numbered that can be assembled, you know. So quite good in that respect.
And did you connect to the way timber frame, the foundations have to be done a certain way so you can connect to them? Was that done by yourselves, or how did
there was something, some allocation? Do you know what I think it was actually? I think that they were just drilled down into the concrete. I'm not sure. I can't remember now. I can't remember how they fixed the steel frame to the foundation. But there was definitely a system in play.
Yeah. And so they didn't do the foundations for you. You arranged that yourself separately.
Oh, no, they did the foundations also. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they did the whole lot. Okay.
The builder did everything right up until the last 20%, if you know what I mean.
Okay. So walk us through those stages from start to finish. So from the point where you actually had the builder on site, so they showed up to clear the site, do the foundations. Did that take very long? That's probably a fairly quick process.
Funny enough, that went really quickly. That, like, the foundation going down, the frame going up, even the upper frame went up. And then we had some RSJ steel had to go in for cantilevers and for particular areas, structural areas in the building. And I think we got, there was a delay there that seemed to run for weeks to get the cantilever piece of steel in. I never really got a handle on why it was so delayed, but I think something was the wrong size. And when the steel's that big and it's the wrong size, it's, you know, it's work, and then the crane can't come on the right day, and it knocks on. So there was a delay there, and we were looking at the frame of a house for quite a long time. It wasn't weatherproofed, and that seemed to drag on for a good while before they started getting it weatherproof, essentially.
Yep. And was that an issue to leave the steel out in the weather?
And no, because it's light gauge stainless, so there was no rusting happening. It's fairly weatherproof, so that wasn't an issue from a materials point of view, but it was an issue from a just a schedule point of view, you know.
Yeah. So then, what was the next phase? Was it the roof going in, or walls?
Yeah, the
or
roof, what? Roof going on. Let me see. Yeah, they had to weatherproof it. So weatherproofing it all up, sticking all the particle board and all that stuff on it. And I think the insulation would have been going on soon enough after that, after the roof. Yeah.
Okay, so it was layer by layer. They basically added on. They had their steel frame, like sticks really of steel,
yeah.
And then they just layered on as you would. Kind of, it's very manual process, I suppose.
Every sheet,
and then you need to stay on top of all the workmanship on site. I guess there's a bit
exactly
more room for
all
human
the
error.
All the deliveries, you know, making sure that when the tile guy comes in, that the tiles are there. You know, there was a couple of occasions where plumbers came to fit things and there was nothing for them to fit. And, you know, just that kind of stuff happens on every build, you know. But I just think it's getting harder and harder to get plumbers and electricians and the key tradesmen in. So you really just like need to have everything that they need there when you get them, you know, because they could be 2 weeks before they're back.
Yeah. So then the builder organized up to what point then? Did you have him just make the house weather tight? Was that the contract?
No, the builder and architect combo were
they were meant to do everything.
The entire build to turnkey.
Okay, so they're the ones who'd kind of missed the boat there with organizing trades and
having stuff on site.
Or was that your responsibility?
It was. I was ordering things from the UK as well, and there was just like, you know, it wasn't the smoothest operation, but it you know, that they weren't the main delays.
Done.
It got done. Yeah, I think the main delays were more around. There being financial stoppages, you know, where the builder maybe had a couple of jobs on the go at once, and, you know, there was maybe a bit of a financial hole from one job leaking into another, you know, the classic worrisome scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I think we went away for a month, for example, at one point we went away and we were like, okay, we'll go away and we'll come back and there'll be loads of progress. And we went away and we came back and there was no progress, you know, zero. So it was kind of like, okay, this is derailing now, you know, because unless we are there standing, like understanding the process and driving it forwards, it's not going to get done. So
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay. Okay. So what was the contract you had in place? Did you sign a contract with the builder?
Oh, absolutely.
What was the arrangement?
The arrangement was full build contract, you know, start to finish.
Okay, based on the construction drawings.
Yeah, exactly. Based on the construction drawings and some of the, there's obviously a lot of, what are those sums? POC, are they? Or
PC sums, yeah. So an estimate of how much.
Sums, exactly. There's loads of PC sums and they were constantly moving, you know, as we moved the goalpost a lot as well during the build. Like, it's a real learning process. You walk into a room that you've designed and it doesn't feel right, and you need to move something, you need to lower a wall, you need to widen a door, you need to do all this kind of stuff, but you don't know until you're standing in the room. You can guess, but you don't know until you're standing in the room.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you keep on top of the budget then? Because there's a lot of...
I didn't. The budget kind of just grew and grew, and you know, it didn't come in on budget anyway, but it came in okay, but it didn't come in on budget, and some things just drifted because things took longer. Like, there was a couple of decisions that maybe were put in as a PC sum that weren't properly thought through, the time ramifications. The perfect example of that is probably our skirting boards. We put in these recessed skirting boards that have like a shadow gap, you know, where the board ends and the render of the wall begins. Mm-hmm. All around the house, all around the architraves and stuff. So I think we had down like a very minimal PC sum, but in reality it took 2 weeks for the team to put the skirting boards in the way that looked right, you know. So that was one of those things that just like ballooned, you know. And mm-hmm. at the same time, not only did it financially balloon, but it kicked the schedule of the entire build 2 weeks.
Yeah. And was that the biggest delay then?
No, there were other delays. We had the rendering of the house was a big issue. We had guys come in and they were putting their corners weren't straight. They were putting the wrong corner moldings on the corners. They weren't corner moldings, and eventually we had to get rid of them because they were just doing such a terrible job. So then we had to the guys on the build were trying to do it and that wouldn't work. So we had to hire someone else outside, and he had to come. Take it all off, take all the work that had been done off and go again. And there was a good few of those kind of false starts, you know, that that are quite substantial, actually. You know, the rendering of a house is a big job and it's expensive. So it was one of those painful budgetary scenarios.
So how do you resolve that with the builder? I presume they said you were liable to
The, or was that, what, at, how did that get
that
sorted?
Stage, at that stage, we worked out an arrangement where I took it out of the hands of the builder and I just sorted it because I couldn't move into a house that wasn't rendered and it needed to be done, you know. And at this stage, I think communication with the builder had broken down significantly. And I was now at that stage project managing the finish of the build along with the architect who had previously been a partner with the builder, but he stayed on to see me through, you know, and the builder kind of
he
vanished.
So, but how did you leave it with him if he had someone put up some work that you took down? He probably wanted to get paid for that.
Above everything, I just wanted everything to be ended on a fair note. And I just wanted fairness from every scenario. And I wanted to be fair to people. And I wanted people to be fair to me. So there was a lot of sitting down and figuring things out. Who owed who what happened, what didn't happen. And in the end, you know, we parted on somewhat okay terms, you know, where it was fine. You know, he ran out of money on other jobs and it came out that he was plugging our money into other jobs and then didn't have money to fulfill his end of the bargain. So I just wanted to finish the house, you know. So we kind of parted, and the architect kept going with me to help me finish. And I just moved on, you know. I was so stressed. It had been 2 years of building this house and the anxiety and the hassle. I just wanted to get it done. I wanted to move forwards. So I just kept moving forwards at any cost, you know. I just needed to get in. So that working with new people was key. And, you know, I found some great people who really helped me out and got stuck in, you know, and people that used to work for the builder, his team, you know, he could no longer afford to pay them. So they left him and I paid them. So they became my team while we finished the build, you know, and they saw me through, which is brilliant.
So how much were you out of pocket for then? It sounds like you had to cut your losses, was it?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact figure, but it wasn't a nothing amount, you know. It was a bit.
Yeah. And so how did you manage that phase then? So you already had your tradesmen, at least that was something that you had there. How was the day to day on site? Did you have to show up?
Did
you have to take time off work, or what would you do?
I work for myself, so I kind of just scaled up my time off, and this became my work, you know. And I actually quite enjoyed the last phases because I had guys around me that I could trust, and we were all working towards the same goal, and they were good people. So I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot, and I know a lot of what we've talked about so far has been quite stressful and negative and stuff, you know, but in amongst it all, it was a fascinating process, and, you know, I learned loads. And that last phase where, you know, we had a core team of guys who were good and we're all working towards the same goal was actually great. I loved showing up every day and solving the problems of the day, you know. And it was good because everything was getting finished. Everything was getting done, final, you know. And I could see the light at the end of the tunnel kind of after a very long, stressful process. I just think that if there's an element of your build that's dysfunctional, even if it costs you a little bit of money or it costs you something, remove it, you know, because it'll stress you out to no end to keep something in the process that it's working against you, you know.
Mm. And at what stage did you cut the builder out then? Was it at the you still have had the house to finish internally, was it?
Yeah, well, we had we were second fix electrics, and we were doing floors, and we were kind of getting into final stages of stuff. the rendering of the house wasn't done. The studio building, which I'm in now, which is my kind of workshop office, that was a lot less further along. So this was a bit behind. This was kind of first fix in some elements. So there's still a good bit to do, you know, but it was all stuff that I could figure out, you know. None of it was structural building stuff that I just don't understand. So I could roll up my sleeves and learn about anything, really, you know.
Yeah. And so then in terms of, you know, quality control and stuff like that, how often did the architect show up? Was that just for the mortgage, or was he there as well as an independent advisor?
He was. So the architect that did our planning wasn't the architect that ended up seeing the build through. The architect that saw the build through was it was a builder architect partnership, you know. And mm-hmm. The builder went one way and the architect stuck with me. So he turned up every day. He was unbelievable. He was digging trenches for waste outlets. He was in holes in the ground. He was putting in the soak pits in the garden. He was up to his elbows in plaster and in insulation, and you know, he was essential. He really got me over the line. And so he turned up every day, you know.
Yeah, so you had that bit of expertise. That's
exactly. He knew exactly what everything needed to be from a standards and how things work, you know. So he was great.
Yeah, and just the I guess those finishes themselves, kitchen, bathrooms, things like that. What really stood out, or was there any troubleshooting, or tell us
about. Yeah, you know, the finishes are kind of the fun bit, you know. I really enjoyed the coming together of all of the things that sat in boxes for months, and you're kind of hoping that, you know, your design decisions gel and work together, and then when the finishes are going up, it's brilliant. There are always, you know, things that happen. Like, I learned one thing I really learned when you have people in doing those kind of things, like tiles, or anything, you know, when you have trades guys in and they're doing specialist work, and you know, you need them there. If someone runs out of something, let's say someone is doing your tiles and they run out of spacers for your tiles, and they're, you know, they're like, I'll just go get some spacers. Don't let them go. Like, you go get it yourself, you know, because if they go, they might not be back that day. They might not be back the next day. Just keep them on site. That was one thing I really learned, was like, people that are there like working away, just like you do the legwork to keep them working. And that was a lesson I learned really towards the end. That stood to me from a schedule point of view.
Okay. And what kind of grunt work did you have to do on site? Like cleaning up, and what was a typical day like?
Everything, you know. It was, I had a little one ton digger here on site. I was doing a lot of like work digging trenches. I was putting in cabling for Wi-Fi across the out to the road. I was doing everything that needed to be done. I was insulating walls. I was painting. I was helping the lads with the timber stuff and the finishings. I put myself to work every day. Whatever needed to be done was the thing I did that day, you know.
And did you have a routine? Was it like, you know, tidy every evening, or I don't know, was there any,
it was work until you can't work anymore.
Yeah, the fittest years of your life.
Yeah, well, my back was certainly feeling it.
And so how long did that take, that last bit of the process?
The last bit of the process, I think it took probably about 6 weeks.
Oh, right. Okay.
Maybe 2 months.
Okay. You went at a good pace there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was a good sprint, you know, because I felt like everyone was working as hard as they could to get us where we needed to get to, you know, and when you feel like that, it gives you good energy. You've got extra gas in the tank when you feel like there's a team working here, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just, I guess, the other thing would be the statutory stuff. So building control, health and safety, and all that kind of stuff. Was the architect taking charge of that, or did you have to deal with any of that stuff?
He was. We had someone come around. They do spot checks every now and then. And we had
got an inspection, really?
We got an inspection, yeah. Someone doorstepped us and shut the site down.
Nice.
Because there were lads operating at a height on a bit of scaffolding rather than a official thing. So that only shut us down for a day. But that was quite early in the build. And then
so those health and safety guys that were there then.
Yeah,
it was building control. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you know, otherwise we had the architect making sure everyone was safe on site, and we had all our stuff set up from when the builder was there. So we were pretty okay in that respect, I think.
Yeah. So you had facilities, like, do you have like a portaloo and somewhere to store stuff?
We had a cabin.
Okay.
It was like a builder's cabin that had a toilet and a kitchen and storage for all the bits and bobs.
Okay, excellent. And I don't know, is there anything else you wanted to touch upon we haven't covered, I guess?
I mean, like, I'm concerned that I've come across a little bit negative on the building process, you know. We had a pretty difficult experience, but I just wanted to reiterate that, you know, anyone that is listening to this that is thinking of doing it, and I don't want to put anyone off, because the juice is completely worth the squeeze. You know, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do. It really, like, genuinely is. It's one of those things that, like, people tell you and you go, yeah, whatever, you obviously did it wrong, you know. It's really it's really, really hard. But, you know, the juice is worth the squeeze, because when you build somewhere for yourself that's geared around you, it's just an amazing experience that constantly, the reward is grows constantly. So a little bit of pain for a long, long reward, it would be like one thing I would like to kind of leave it on, you know, is don't be discouraged by people who have bad experiences. It's part of the process. And, you know, I know everything about this house. I know absolutely everything about it through attrition, but, you know, it's good to, it's the juice is worth the squeeze, basically.
Yeah. So is there anything about the design or the way the house is working that you would change with hindsight, or are you huffed with the way it turned out?
I think the only thing I would change is I'd probably put underfloor heating in my office, because I have electric heaters, electric rads.
Mm-hmm.
They're just absolutely murder on electricity usage. So, you know, I should have given this building a bit more priority. I just didn't think I'd be needing it so much. But otherwise, design-wise, you know, we put a lot of thought into the design. We put a lot of effort into getting it right for our needs. Now, we've just had a kid, so that might stress a couple of factors with space and layout, but so far no big regrets. But let's wait till the kid is like three.
Sticking their fingers everywhere.
Yeah, like I need to do a job on my stairs, for example, because it is the least child friendly stairs on the planet. But you know, we'll figure that out.
Ah, yeah. Listen, your railings are kind of open, isn't it?
They are.
Yeah. They could stick their head through that.
They could.
Sure. Stair yokes that block the stairs off, you'd be grand.
Yeah. I might need to get a cargo net or something to put, like, run between them.
To catch them if they fall.
just put a big trampoline at the bottom of the stairs.
A whole circus act there for you. Listen, that's great stuff. Well, listen, thanks so much for your time, and
great chatting to you.
Join us next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Self-Build Plus. It'll give you full access to the selfbuild.ie website, including the Self-Build Plus journey, which is your step-by-step guide to self-building and home improving. Your membership also gives you first access to all videos and podcasts, as well as access to our members-only Facebook group, which features regular Facebook Live events.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.